This is what's left of a school in Belogorivka in the Luhansk region of eastern Ukraine. Russian forces bombed it. Nearly all the people who stayed in the village were hiding in this building when it was attacked. Dozens are feared dead.
Taking into account that it was an airstrike and not a simple artillery shelling, when the explosion happened, the temperature was extreme. Certainly our emergency workers will be clearing the debris with maximum speed, but there is only a very slim chance that anyone survived. But we hope for the best.
Since the war in Ukraine started, Russian forces have targeted hospitals, apartment blocks and other civilian buildings. The World Health Organization is gathering evidence for a possible war crimes investigation.
WHO has now verified 200 attacks on healthcare in Ukraine since the war began. These attacks must stop. Healthcare is never a target.
Ukraine's president says his country is fighting against a new form of Nazism. Volodymyr Zelensky was marking Victory in Europe Day. It's celebrated on the 8th of May, the date in 1945, when Nazi Germany surrendered.
Decades after World War II, darkness returned to Ukraine, and it became black and white again. Again, evils returned, again, in a different uniform, under different slogans, but for the same purpose. A bloody reconstruction of Nazism was organized in Ukraine, a fanatical repetition of this regime.
At the besieged steel plant in Mariupol, Ukraine's government says all civilians have been rescued. Civilians and soldiers had been trapped inside the Azovstal steel mill for nearly 2 months as Russian attacks intensified. And with the civilians now reportedly gone, it's the last holdout for Ukrainian fighters in the city. It's still unclear if President Putin will be able to declare victory in Mariupol in time for May the 9th, the day Russia celebrates the Soviet Union's World War II victory over the Nazis. But there is no doubt this anniversary won't mark the end of a conflict where both sides now invoke the battles of the 1940s. Victoria Gatenby, Al Jazeera.
Ukraine's Azov Battalion, the last holdout against Russian forces in the besieged Mariupol, has promised to fight to the end. For weeks, hundreds of fighters have been trapped in the Azovstal steelworks in the city. All civilians have now left the facility. Russia is continuing its heavy bombardment of the plant, though. The Azov Battalion says many of its soldiers are wounded. They've asked for help getting the injured out.
All of the military personnel in the garrison of the Mariupol, we eyewitnessed the war crimes performed by Russia, by Russian army. We are witnesses for this. Surrender is not an option because Russia is not interested in our lives. They are not interested to let us live.
Hoda Abdelhamid joins us live from the Ukrainian capital, Kyiv. Hoda, what else stood out to you during that press conference?
Well, it was a very long press conference that is actually still ongoing. It's happening online from a member of the Azov regiment at the steelworks in Mariupol. So, you know, we asked him all sorts of questions, and he talked about the civilians. We asked him if every single civilian was now out of the Azovstal factory. He said he couldn't confirm that simply because there was a lot of rubble, a lot of places that had been bombed, and they don't know if someone has been left behind or not. He said, quote, "I hope so," but he also questioned how the government could could declare that every single civilian is out of there when no one from the government or the international aid organizations, and what he meant by that is the UN and the Red Cross, did not enter the grounds of that factory. And then he went on talking about their living conditions, very difficult living conditions, saying that, of course, they are completely outnumbered and outgunned by the Russians, and then breaking into the Russian lines is an extremely difficult task.
Hoda, they certainly have the resolve to fight to the end, but do they have the resources?
Well, Well, no, he did say that it is a very difficult situation, that they know that they won't come out of there alive. He said if we surrender to the Russians, then we know we're going to die anyway. But that's not an option for them on the table. He did have some harsh words towards Ukrainian politicians. He said very clearly and very boldly that the Azov regiment has been left on its own to protect Mariupol ever since this war started. He said he blamed the government also for leaving the southern front or southern Ukraine on its own, and that the result is that nearly all of Mariupol, except for that steelworks, is in the hands of the Russians. But also he talked about the Kherson region, not very far from there, that is also occupied by the Russians. Now, he also said he hasn't received the Azov regiment hasn't received any of the weapons that were provided to Ukraine by Western allies, by the U.S., by NATO. He said, we haven't received anything. We've been left completely on our own. And at the moment, we're completely surrounded and there's no way anyone can get anything to us at this stage. He did talk about maybe the possibility of at some point the Ukrainian army, if it continues taking back ground in the nearby Zaporizhia region, then they could create a sort of corridor for the soldiers that are in that steelworks to come out. But he pointed out to the fact that the closest Ukrainian point at this stage is 100 kilometers away. So that is also quite a challenge and wouldn't happen in the coming days. And he did say that the only solution at this point, and that's why they have been calling for it over and over again, is for a political solution, for a third country to intervene, maybe evacuate all of those still remaining fighting inside that steelworks to go to a third country. That is something we had heard also from the commander of the Azov regiment over the past weeks. But at this point, surrender is not an option. And if they have to stay there until the bitter end, from what he said, that's they would do. He did, however, call to try to evacuate the wounded. He said there's a large number of wounded there. Among them, he said that there were some civilian wounded, but the bulk were military. And some are in a difficult condition. He said the field hospital was still working, but they need further treatment and they're not able to get that because at the moment they're being pounded constantly. And actually, during this very long online press conference, the connection was interrupted a couple of times. He did point a couple of times to the fact that there was a large explosion nearby him, or he heard of it. So certainly a very dire situation. And when you actually sit and watch this soldier talking very calmly against a white wall, but you do also get really a sense of how much they are completely isolated and in an extremely difficult position.
Yes, you certainly do get those insights. Thank you very much, Hoda Abdelhamid, live for us in the capital, Kyiv. Russia's defence ministry says its forces have destroyed a Ukrainian warship near the Black Sea port of Odessa. It also says its air defences shot down two Ukrainian bombers and a helicopter over Snake Island. The statements haven't been independently verified, though. Hanna Shalest is the Security Studies Program Director at the think tank Ukrainian PRISM. She explains why Odessa is so strategically important.
Usually when you speak about Odessa from the shipping point of view, you're speaking not only about one port in Odessa, but also two satellite ports in Pivdane and Chernomorsk, 30 kilometers around. And they comprise the 60% of Ukrainian export and 90% of Ukrainian grain export. So you can understand the significance both for Ukrainian economy, but also for the food security around the world. Now Ukraine is trying to find the alternatives way how to transfer it by land, for example, from Odessa to Constanza in Romania, and to have it been shipped from there. But try to imagine that one ship is approximately 5,000 tracks. Definitely from logistical point of view, that is just a disaster. But also Odessa is very important from symbolic point of view to the Russians. It's as a part of the Russian Empire 200 years ago. That's also very important as the Navy base. And it's just very important as the third biggest city in the country, because in this way you can control the whole South.
The director of the CIA says he's convinced Vladimir Putin is hardening his resolve for the war in Ukraine. William Burns says despite the resistance from Ukrainian forces, the Russian president is not willing to lose. He added Putin has been, as he called it, stewing for years and is motivated by grievance, ambition and insecurity.
I think he's in a frame of mind in which he doesn't believe he can afford to lose. So the stakes are quite high in this phase in the east of Ukraine, as you know, Ukraine's military, with support from the West, continues to resist. But I don't think this means that Putin is deterred at this point, because he staked so much on the choice that he made to launch this invasion that I think he's convinced right now that doubling down still will enable him to make progress.
Europe is marking the 77th anniversary of victory over Nazi Germany by Allied forces and the end of World War II. But ceremonies this year have been overshadowed by Russia's invasion of Ukraine. French President Emmanuel Macron met veterans and laid wreaths at landmarks across Paris. It was the first time since the COVID-19 pandemic that spectators were allowed at the day's events. Let's bring in Nadim Barbe, who's live for us in London. Hello there, Nadim. What's been happening to mark the anniversary, particularly in the context of Russia's invasion of Ukraine?
Well, as always, on May the 8th, in many different European countries, there have been events to commemorate the surrender of the Nazi regime in 1945. Here in the UK, in fact, officials have just announced a package of extra military support to Ukraine to the tune of $1.6 billion, clearly timed for this symbolic day. It's not a very important anniversary as such, the 77th, but of course the war in Ukraine adds a certain poignancy to commemorations. Similarly, the most senior German politician so far to visit Kiev, the Speaker of the German Parliament, Bärbel Bass, is now in the Ukrainian capital to commemorate victims of World War II and to hold talks with people like the Ukrainian Prime Minister. And in France, President Macron, who's just been newly sworn in on Saturday, has now laid a wreath at the tomb of the unknown soldier by the Arc de Triomphe in Paris. Now, his Minister of Culture, Roselyne Bachelot, said that the ceremonies took on a certain considerable significance given what's happening in Ukraine. And her colleague, the foreign minister, Jean-Yves Le Drian, has taken to Twitter to say that we reject all forms of instrumentalization and manipulation of the memory of those who gave their lives. He also said that Europe won't forget the soldiers from across the Soviet Union, including Ukrainians and Russians, who contributed to the victory against the Nazis. Well, those calls against instrumentalization are probably in vain, because already Ukraine and Russia have been trading accusations of using the memory of the Second World War to further their military aims. You've, I believe, seen in Victoria's piece how President Zelensky has really gone to the heart of that conflict, reminding people of the horrors. Similarly, Russia has since February presented this as a special military operation and part of trying to denazify Ukraine, something that the Ukrainian government and much of the population, it has to be said, have laughed at. But still, Russia, which is preparing its own celebrations for Monday, Victory Day there, which happened a day later because of the timing in Russia when the treaties were signed. That is a huge occasion every year, with big military parades through Moscow, lots of crowds gathering in Red Square. They've already been rehearsing, but they are also rehearsing the rhetoric about the huge sacrifices which the Soviet Union made, including so many Russian troops dying in the Second World War, and tying this to the idea that somehow the rulers, the current government in Ukraine, are linked to fascists. Well, that Azov battalion that we were just hearing about, which has been crucial in one part of Ukraine, has got its roots in fascism, in neo-Nazi members. The government in Ukraine will say that that has changed, pointing out that political parties with clear far-right tendencies have clearly been sidelined within the parliament and so on. But it's still a raging debate in Moscow, and it's something that clearly motivates a lot of people.
All right, well, we appreciate you bringing us up to speed. Thank you very much, Nadine Barber, live for us in London.